irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Ilona, Accent On London Edition on LA Talk Radio. So, another Monday, and previous Monday I was having two wonderful sisters. They both were born in India. One of them spent most of her life in USA. Another one, who is our guest for today, she practically lives and breathes London and UK. So we are continuing our second part of the interview with right now, and your name is
Renu Faraway.
Renu, I want you to spell your name for people.
Okay, it's R-A-N-U, and then Faraway as in a long way away. Once upon a time in a galaxy.
We just love this name. It's just so, so special, so romantic, so far away. Lovely. But you and your sister had one name, yes? And you shared the name?
Bulla.
Yeah. So please, let's start maybe from beginning. Accent On loves to put accent on people's journey, life stories, successful life stories, because, and woman power, we love that. I just am so excited to tell people how your life went from studying, from very, very big appearances on TV and production TV, from your own way, how you right now won't wrap around the early 40s, 50s. I don't know how old you are, but you are gorgeous. So I think we all will learn a lot about you. Let's start from the beginning. You were born in India?
Yes, I was born in Ludhiana, which is in Punjab, North India. But I have no memory of that time at all because we moved here when I was 1.5.
So you had your sister, Rupinder, who was our guest also. And you have another sister who was born there? Or
yes, she was born there. So my sisters are 9 years older and 7. That's the age difference between us. Rupinder is 9 years older than
and
me.
And you were the one.
And I'm the youngest one, yeah.
So you don't remember anything?
No.
And your parents, so why did they move to UK?
Many reasons. First of all, they had three daughters. And I think my father felt life... My father really believed in educating women and letting them have professions of their own, standing up on their own two feet. And I think he felt at that time, it's different in India now, but I think he felt that at that time that would be easier if they left India. And also he got offered a job here. They knew that he always wanted to spread his wings further. So I either was looking at moving to the US or moving to the UK. And at that time, people in the UK needed doctors.
Your daddy was a doctor?
Yeah. So he moved here first, got settled, and then called for us to come.
Wow. And Mama went with him or together with three daughters?
No, she came later with the three of us.
So that's how your journey started here in London? Always in London?
Well, yeah, funnily enough, first of all, we moved to London because that's where his job was, but not for long. And then he was offered a better job in the Midlands, and then that led to another better job in Birmingham. So we were only here for a tiny spell, and then I actually grew up. All my formative years were spent in Birmingham.
Huh. And your schooling, your high school and then university started also... probably with big pleasure. You love London. You love America. So everything, your sister was like dreaming always to move to America, and she loves America. She likes London too, but seems like America was her home, and she calls it home. You enjoy life in London.
Yeah.
And everything what London can bring to us. But you were the dreamer in the home. But parents saw the mission for you to become a doctor. They wanted you to study to become a doctor. You had something else in your mind, but you still agree with what parents ask you to do. In a way, you settled. Yeah. You called the settle to me. I think you are a genius. So can you tell us what you were studying?
Well, all through school, from primary school, I loved acting. That was when I felt, I don't know, that there was just a different force in me. Whenever I was performing in front of people, it just took me to another place. And it's the one thing that I feel I was... I never say I'm particularly good at anything, actually, but when I was acting, I was like, no, this I can do, and this I know I'm good at. And all through secondary school, I did Lambda exams. It's London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts. I did up to my gold medals. I got my medals early. I would perform in plays. And I was... there was something about the power of being able to stand in front of an audience and control their emotions with your words and your performance. I loved it so much. But, you know, my parents, you know, being immigrants, they think we... brought you to this country so you could have good
security
and etc. And this was a world which they knew nothing about. You know, they knew, you know, like a lot of Asian parents, they knew about medicine, law, engineering. They knew about the traditional professions. And whenever I brought up going to drama school, it was always like, no, forget it. And because I could do science, my teachers and my father really wanted me to study medicine. I wasn't particularly talented at them, I think, but, you know, everybody was like, no, go and do this. But then I just couldn't face the idea of 5 years doing something which I really wasn't committed to. So I said, look, let's compromise and I'll study law instead. It's 3 years. And then after that, please, can I just follow my own path? And I think they thought, okay, well, she can do law and then we'll speak to her and then make her qualify, go to the bar or go and be a solicitor.
But you didn't end up just doing 3 years law. You continue education to become a journalist.
Yes, so I did my law degree, and then I was like, yeah, no, so now I need to find another way, another place. And by then I wasn't confident enough at that stage to say, right, okay, now I'm going to go back to drama. I think, you know, there was a spell where I'd lost it. I think that's exactly what happened. But whilst I was doing my degree, I started to write for the magazine, the college magazine, and I found I enjoyed that. So I thought, well, I'll try writing and see what happens. And I landed an internship at a magazine called Spare Rib, and that was the world's first feminist magazine, which was founded in the 60s, and I came to it in the 90s. Started off as an intern, and then after 3 years, they invited me to join the editorial collective and take over news. And that was amazing. I got to write what I wanted. I got to commission what I wanted.
20-something, and you already were getting serious offers. Yeah.
I thought, this is what life
is
like.
That's a performance, almost. You performed in many different ways.
Well, it was... I honestly didn't know. This is the thing. When you're young, you just don't appreciate enough when something amazing lands in your lap. And I was like, oh, this is just how life is. This is how the world works. But anyway, I did that and I loved that, and I became friends with, I made friends of the other editorial members, some of whom are still friends today. Everybody has been scattered off to other parts of the world, but two of them I'm still in touch with. And then I thought, well, actually, this is wonderful, but I really like to work in broadcasting. I'd like to make documentaries eventually, like, you know, serious, hard-hitting documentaries. Wrote off to loads of people, and they all came back with the same advice, saying, OK, do a postgrad in broadcast journalism. That's the route you need to take now. So I applied for a scholarship, and I got a scholarship to go and study broadcast journalism in London again. Did that for a year, and whilst I was doing that, my professors would say, OK, look, there's this job here. Why don't you go and see? It's a little job. It's for a week, or there's, you know, do this job in the morning before your lectures start, or there's this one which you can do at weekends. So I started to work. That was one of the great things about the postgrad, was that it opened up a world which had been closed to me because of the contacts which my professors knew.
Yes.
So whilst I was studying, I got to read the news at a local radio station, I got reporting shifts for them. I was working at BBC 5 Live, and that led to me working at Radio 4 on a show, which is still going today, called You and Yours. It's like a consumer show. And I got to do some research at ITN News, around MPs, so it was great. I started to work, and I started to see what the industry was like. And then after my postgrad, I carried on freelancing, working at Radio 4, 5 Live, and reading the news. And then I found out that through a friend who was also on the course, he said, look, they're looking for some producers at London News Talk, London News Radio, which at the time was owned by Reuters. And that's now, in London, everybody will know that those stations have now become LBC. And I went there and just, you know, when you walk into a place and you go, I've arrived.
There.
This is where I should be. It was just an open plan newsroom, and it was just busy, and everybody was doing
energy,
something.
Yeah,
there was a real energy. There was a real buzz about the place. And I started doing a few shifts there. Eventually, I got a job producing an evening show called First Edition with a lovely presenter called John Terrett. And this looked at the news the next day, what was going to happen the next day. And I had so much fun.
But the hours were probably crazy.
Yeah, you know, not so crazy. You know, you started just after lunch, and then you finished in the evening, and it was fine. I was used to crazy hours. It's what I expected. And then one of the other presenters there heard the show, and he requested that I produce his show for him. And this presenter was somebody who I had grown up listening to on the radio. You know, I was a
fan. I loved his work. Also, I'm a singer. Sorry. And I was listening to radio, of course, when I was young, 10 years, 11 years old. All the wonderful Polish singers were singing. I always imagined myself being inside of the radio and somehow somewhere singing with them. And yet 10 years later or 8 years later, who would think I was on the same stage with these people? So to me, it was like a dream come true. So I cannot even imagine you having your own hero and then working for or with your own hero.
Yeah.
How much learning, how much exciting is this? So tell me a little bit about who is this person?
His name's Simon Bates. And actually, the funny thing is, the first day I walked into that place, I got into the lift, and then he got into the lift with me, and I looked up and I was like, oh,
is this him?
The lift.
This is like a movie scene.
This is crazy. And he was very polite. He said hello. He knew I was new. Very warm, very welcoming. Even though I had nothing to do with him, he was charm personified. Anyway, eventually I got to produce.
What was the show about?
Yes. His show is really unusual. It was such a lovely show, actually, really lovely. It was a 3-hour show. The first hour was all news items, so you would like pick several topics, and then you would have interviews on the phone about current affairs. The second hour was the arts hour. And so if there was a new book or a movie, I think it was like two or three, like, and you try to get the biggest star that was in town. And because it was him and everybody knew him, and because it was London News Radio, London News Talk, again, all the London pluggers wanted their people to be on your show. So even though it was just a little radio, you know, it was a little station, but because of its reputation and its London, you know, you would get Dudley Moore, you would get the Hollywood stars. They would all, you know, everybody would come on.
Promote.
Stuff. Yeah, it was fabulous. So
this show was really promoting the good news, or focusing also on something what bad happened in the first hour.
The first hour, it was just whatever was happening, and then you would have the arts
culture
hour, and then the final hour would be the phone in, where you would discuss things and people would call in. So it was a really, really sweet show, actually. It was a lot of fun.
How
to
long
do.
You work with him for the show? What was the name of the show again?
It was called, I think it was just called The Simon Bates Show.
Oh,
I think that's what we called it.
Yeah. How long did you work
for the show? I can't remember. It was about 9 months a year, and then he was offered the chance to present in radio. The two big shows, as you know, are Breakfast and Drive Time.
Yeah.
Those are the ones which are, for, you know, just statistical reasons, people are getting ready in the morning, they listen to the radio, they're driving home, they drive time. He was offered the breakfast show, so this was a morning show that we were doing at London News Talk, which started at 10. He was offered the breakfast show on a national radio station, and he said, look, would you come and produce for me there? And I was like, well, yeah, sure, of course I will, this is an amazing opportunity, thank you. So I went, but here, we were a tiny team. There was like three of us, and we were really close. Apart from the presenter, there were three of us working on the show. We were very tight. We all got on brilliantly well, and it was like family. That's my experience of broadcasting, is that when it's good, it's like family. And we moved to this national radio station. It was a much larger team, and it was a... It was a dysfunctional family. It wasn't fun.
Oops. It wasn't the family like that exists.
Yeah, it wasn't fun at all. Neither of us enjoyed it. And that was one of my first lessons. I was like, okay, I was there and I was really, really happy, and I left ambition. And I learned very quickly. It's like, if you're really happy, you stick with it. Just because something has a bigger name, or you know, there's more money,
can kill you.
It really can kill you, because it was soul destroying. It was absolutely, and you know, the hours were awful. That's when the hours genuinely were awful, because it's because I had been his producer. Everyone was like, "No, you're going to stay on air with him. Whenever he's on air, you go there. You're on air." So I would have to start really, really painfully early in the morning, and then when I should have been finishing, I wasn't finishing, because people were like, no, he really trusts you and respects you. So anything that you've started, you finish off. So I wasn't leaving there sometimes till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, absolutely, you know, dirt tired after having started at a crazy time in the morning. And the stress of it as well. It's like people put a lot of pressure. Which usually I can cope with. You can cope with stress if you have people around you who support you. But anyway.
But you are more creative, so you really, I think you felt also you are locked in this little bubble that you cannot get out.
Yeah.
And, you know, or like bunny running around. So that was how long you worked on the show?
Oh, it felt like 40 years, but I think it was probably about a year.
Okay.
And then my boss, one of my bosses from my previous job at London News Talk, he was now working at a TV station, and he said, look, why don't you come and join us here? It's a real laugh, and you can take over the news desk. You can be part of the news desk. They're looking for an assistant editor. So I went in and had a look, and it was, you know, it was the same kind of vibe. It was that I'd had at London News Talk. You walked in. Beautiful open plan office, crazy colours on the walls. It was like very exciting, a buzz, and I liked my bosses straight away. You know, you can always, if you like your bosses, that feeds down. It's like if you've got a good boss,
yes,
you will work absolutely really hard for a good boss. Whereas, you know, a boss who's just who you can't trust, then the workforce are going to feel insecure. So I could feel that the bosses were really good. very positive, very supportive. And I said, yes, okay, that's this I want to do. So I started working at this station called Live TV. It was a tiny little cable station. And I was working on the news desk and quickly got to see that all the training that I had, all my classical news training, I had to just park that to one side because these guys wanted something else. And I was like, okay, they like alternate stuff. I'll give them alternate stuff. So I was like, okay, let's do National Enquirer, but for news. So you would have a traditional presenter sitting, you know, with a London backdrop behind her, giving all this crazy news going out. And then behind her would be a six foot rabbit costumed person acting out the news.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was very alternative. It was a crazy, crazy place.
So different. Nobody did stuff like that before. Of course, this type of shows are running a very successful life in America. We wake up to learning every 40 or 1 hour what's happening in Hollywood, what is the newest gossip. And really, outside of having newspapers, we are listening on the radio to the same stories, and we really are watching on TV every few hours the same news, and the same in London, you know, the morning shows or breakfast or something. How much of it is really given to us for a moment when we wake up? So that was the beginning probably of the morning show that are focusing 100% on entertainment. And what was happening? Yes.
Yeah, it was new. It was kind
with
of
bunny
age.
Behind
with
that,
a great bit with news bunny behind us, and it was a great place. It was almost like going to a real fun college, because we were all learning, you know, and the bosses liked that. You know, I'd never worked in television before.
They wanted fresh. I'm sure the boss knew that young people, they bring something completely new. If you let them do
exactly.
it, they will create something fresh. So fresh is great.
So that I was learning how the cameras work, what a chroma key background is, and how to write scripts for because it's different. Writing a script for news and for television is very different to radio. So it was all very fast.
What a school, huh?
But it was great. Oh my God, it was so great. And my boss, the news editor, was just wonderful. Our news team was huge. There were about 16 of us, and it was just, it was family. It was wonderful. Loved it.
How long we stayed with this bunny show? What was the name again of the show?
Well, it was the news bulletins, and then there was a half-hour news program which they did later on, which was more serious, which I worked on that as well. I wasn't there for long enough. I was only there for a few months, and then I was asked to move into programming.
Okay.
Which was also, that's what I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to learn, how do you make a program?
Plan.
What's the format for a program? Because then I wanted to work on documentaries. So my boss asked me to develop a show using a lie detector.
Wow.
Where you would have two people who have a disagreement over something, and then you put one of them onto a polygraph and ask them, you find out whether or not it's true. This format is now being used a lot,
yes.
We were the first ones
even
to do it.
Housewives, I don't know if you're watching the Housewives from time to time, they're bringing, you know, housewives, and they just ask, did you do it? Did you do it? Or they say, no, I prove I didn't do it. Yeah, you're right. And who would think that the legality of it, which is so serious, is right now used for our entertainment.
It is. It's pure entertainment. But
I would do this for marriage.
But that's
like, I will have it home. Wake up in the morning. Put your arm.
We should all have
questions.
One. Yeah.
I don't know. I trust you. So let's talk about it.
You should put that on the wedding list.
I know. Really.
Add that.
Absolutely. Once a month, we are going truth or not.
Well, that show was really successful. And ITV, which is one of the network channels here, they said, we like this. And they commissioned us to make a series for them. And our show was the first show to be picked up from cable and then put onto national television.
Congratulations.
So it went, and that you know, went really well. It was very successful. But sadly, I was at Live for, was it 3 or 4 years? I was there for a long time, much longer than I expected.
So was this your decision to move away from the desk and programming and doing something else? Or you somehow, you met somebody who took you away? How the next step in your life happened?
Oh, well, the channel shut down.
Okay.
That's what happened, okay. You know. I mean, and it was in so TV, no, to have a job where you don't need to be, we call it a staff job. I don't know what you call it in the US, but basically you're an employee. You work there all the time. You go in every day, you're paid a salary, you have holiday pay, you have sick pay. That is so rare in television. And yet that's what we had at Live.
Oh, that was good.
It was amazing,
good,
yeah.
Place.
But, you know, I was able to use that time in order to buy my first flat. So thankfully I bought a flat in the 90s in London, because nowadays it is so difficult to buy a place. And then after that, I took a little bit of time out and I was just like, oh, I wonder what I should do now. Yeah. I wonder what I should do now. Because we were all made redundant. And I wanted to buy my sister a birthday present. So I thought, well, I'll buy her a head massage treatment. So I went to this amazing place, which is not far from me. I'd seen it various times, called Indian Champisage, because Champisage is head massage. And I spoke to the guy there who runs the center. His name was Narendra, and said, "Oh yeah, can I book one of these, please, for my sister?" And we just got talking, as you do. And he said, "Oh, so what do you do?" And I told him, and he goes, "Well, I want to write a book." But Narendra, just brain the size of the universe, so smart, an incredible memory, access to all these resources. But not everything he needed was in Braille, and he was blind.
Oh, wow.
So he said, look, would you be able to go through more material with me, and we can put this book together? And I was like, well, yeah, sure. So we put this proposal together. We took it to HarperCollins, and HarperCollins said yes. So I ended up ghostwriting a book for...
What was it about?
It was with him and his wife, Kundan Mehta, about how to look young naturally without a facelift.
I'm signing for a whole year course, and everybody with me.
Yeah.
And we want to buy this book.
Yeah.
It's still available
on
Amazon.
It's still available, still
available.
Again,
one more time, what is the title?
Oh, gosh, I should have looked this up. I think it's called Indian Facelift, or Natural Facelift. And the authors are Narendra and Kundan Mehta, and their surname is spelled Mehta.
He has his own business still here?
He sadly passed a few years ago, and I think Kundan is now retired. But the business is still going. It's now moved. It's still in North London. It's just off Caledonian Road.
Okay. I need to go there. I need to go tight my face and neck for, you know.
I have to tell
naturally.
You, so because I was writing the book, I needed to have a treatment to see what it was like.
Yeah.
And what they do is they did half of my face. Kundan did half of my face, and she left the other half. And she said, go have a look at yourself in the mirror. And honestly, it was like I had Bell's palsy. So the half that she'd done, I could move and it was free. The half that she hadn't done felt so stiff. And this is just after one treatment, like half a treatment. I could not believe how much tension and pressure you hold in your face.
Yeah.
So she did the other half, and oh gosh, it was just incredible.
And then she said, come back in next week. And you were like, how can I go with one face beautiful? So I only looked to the left. To the
that would have been shocking, wouldn't it?
Funny.
That would have been, yeah.
Oh, I just saw yesterday on TV, they did some threading for facelift. And that's what the lady did. She did one side only for the person from the public who was watching TV. She did one thread and she said, come back tomorrow, I'm finished. I'm like, I cannot do this on live TV. I'm like, wow. That's funny. Now time for a little break. Ilona Europa, look at me now.
I never thought that love can bring it's me you left behind. And time, this time will stop, 'cause you and I are covered in the dust of the hopes and dreams I know will hurt to visit even once. So cry.
So the book, you said you were writing ghostwriting, yes?
Yes, so we did the book, that was great. And then whilst I was finishing that off, I found out about a channel that was being launched. They were looking for launch producers. And I thought, well, actually, this would be a great experience.
Yeah.
You know, you start from scratch.
I love it. I love stuff like build things from
building it from scratch. And then the learning opportunity there is, it's a rare thing where you can actually go in and there's nothing there. You know, there's no staff, there's no systems, there's no script, it's just an idea. And I thought, well, this just sounds too good to be true. So I went for the interview, and again, it was my boss. My boss, I just loved her from the first instant. Deborah Ward. She's still doing wonderful things. She's just such an inspiring person with, again, just this tremendous brain. I don't know if she
appreciates that. Did you reach out to her recently?
Yes, I did, actually. I did, of course.
That's wonderful.
And so the idea was an auction channel. It was the first auction channel.
Wow.
So it's not like a regular channel where you sell stuff, but it was to bring in a game element.
Oh. I love it. I watch every day on the Channel 3, I think at 2, they have this gentleman, older gentleman, who brings people who want to just auction or sell to do their stuff. I just love it. This is like, oh my gosh, at 2, I am always there and watching. Yeah, so you were...
It was introducing a game show element into this. And you know, there was a warehouse. We didn't have a system in place for how the goods from the warehouse would get onto the studio floor, and then from the studio floor to the so it was literally, you had to just think, okay, let's go for the very simple, let's work out this from the very basics. So let's walk through this and see how it's going to work. How is the script going to work? And what kind of a script are we going to have? Is it going to be scripted? Are we going to have auto cue? And we just decided, okay, no auto cue, none of that. We just train the presenters. They have a bare script, and then with that, then they have to ad lib, but they have to learn all of the. We wanted them to be as natural as they could, but within a format.
Live action, yeah.
And it was actually whilst I was there that I first got to train presenters, and some people were experienced.
Now you are getting to the very important turn in your life, which seems that's what you are developing and pursuing, this type of career. And who would think that this show, when you were the one in charge of people, how they act in front of camera, if they are feeling confident or shy, or you were taking care of them. So tell us, what was your role?
Well, I hadn't realized at the time that this was something that would happen in the future. I would come back to this, but some presenters had a huge amount of experience. You know, some that we had one presenter who was a very well-known face who I had actually already worked for before as well. And then we had some other people who had done a little bit of TV work, not much, maybe some radio work, and then we had the people who had no experience at all. But they wanted to have a career in television. So working with those people and making them feel at ease was, I don't know, it was magical. It
rewarding.
Was lovely.
Very magical.
It was so
rewarding.
You see
right away before and after.
And I remember one night, because we were on air for a long, long time, and one night one of the presenters, she was exhausted. She was so tired. She was one of the ones, she was a mother. She'd had been a housewife, and you know, her life had completely changed, and she needed to earn money, and she had put so much stress on herself, and was desperate to do really, really well at this because everybody was relying on her. You could feel that was at the front of her mind, and I was like, "No, you've got to forget about that. Free yourself of that, and just enjoy this moment." Be here now with me. Don't think about all the audience. Just think about you're communicating with me through the microphone. When you look at that camera, you picture me. You're talking to me. And one night, she just run out of words. She was so tired. So I was like, no, you're not going to do this. We're going to do this together. So I was like, well, everything I say, you repeat. So I was feeding her the words, and she was coming back with the words. And it was such a lovely two-way experience between us. We got through it. And after that, she was never lost for words again. She was just, she was fine.
And a few years later, your dream job right now is to work with young people, children.
Yeah.
And you take them... with the same way of, you know, to get them better and less shy, more active in school. I don't want to jump the leap, but, you know, amazing, from the grown-ups, now you take care of the younger people.
Well, it occurred to me, because I've then worked with lots of people with no experience of presenting who need to present, with lots of CEOs and heads of companies, and it's all good. I love it all. But it occurred to me that children and young adults, they have to present themselves more now than ever before.
Absolutely. Everything, whole life is really on Facebook, outside, on the street. We are all selfies, this all today, right now. How do we look, how we talk, how we respond? And a lot of younger people are better than others. So how to take a child who is shy, who is very intelligent or closed up or just insecure, to level them up a little bit higher so they can speak out their thoughts and their feelings.
It's all based on their confidence. And the confidence... the way I came to this was that when my son was born, as he was growing up, when he was tiny, he was talking so... He was a very, very early talker. He had like 5-word sentences at 6 months. He was like nattering away, so bright, just soaking up information everywhere, just loved history, loved finding out about all these different things. And I was just like, whoa, you know, what an amazing kid. And apart from all of that, you know, he's very emotionally intelligent. He's so kind and so gentle, so sweet, just lovely, lovely boy. But when he started going to school, I noticed he was coming back and he was a little bit, withdrawn. And I'd say, oh, so what did you do today? Thinking that, you know, when he started school, he would just grab it I thought he can't wait to show everybody how, share his knowledge with everybody. And I'd say, well, what did you talk about today in school? He goes, oh, well, we learned about castles. I'm like, castles? But that's your specialist subject. Did you share all your information with everybody? And he's like, oh, Mum, school doesn't work like that. You don't really do that. The teacher talks and then you don't really say anything. I was like, okay. And then they'd be talking about knights. And I'm like, you know so much about knights. Oh, my goodness, you know about the armor. You know what they did. You know how they trained. Did you share your knowledge? He's like, no, Mum, it's not really the time to do that. Anyway, I was lucky enough. It's a lovely, lovely school. I thought, well, next time there's an opportunity for me to go in, I can see what's going on and what's happening. So I offered to go in and talk to them about Diwali, which is a Hindu and Sikh festival. So I said, look, shall I come in and I can talk to you about it? Maybe we can act out a play. I can get all the kids to take part in a play. And then I was able to see what was happening. And yeah. I was like, okay, so we need to work a little bit on his presentation skills so that he can become more confident in class. I did. Worked on it for a couple of years, and each presentation he did, he was extraordinary. He was absolutely extraordinary. Consequently, the way he interacted in class was a 180-degree turnaround. When anything was happening, he would be one of the first people to put his hand up. And I was like, okay, if I can do that with him, I can do it with other people. Other parents saw the difference in him, and they said, can you do that for my child?
Yes. And so that's how business has started. Yes, yeah, so new business completely.
And that's what happened. And there's nothing out there for children. So I was like, well, this is something I can do, and I love working with children. There's nothing, honestly. There is nothing
more rewarding.
The most exciting documentary. You know, we shut down part of downtown LA for a documentary I was working on to film a car chase. It was amazing. It was so exciting. But honestly,
seeing a child
faltering and they come out of that and they come out of their shell, and you know that you're setting that child up for the rest of their life.
Yeah, and people who listen for 8 years already, Accent On, and they had the pleasure to listen to interviews which I brought a lot of my students, and mostly they were artists, singers. And I was training them from age of 11. And some of them, they were natural singers, but like 80% of them, parents were just bringing cassette. They told me, can you do something? My child seems like she likes to sing, but really she will never go for an audition. She will never show that she has some tiny voice or something. All have ADD and cannot focus on anything, but music is something that maybe my child likes it. So to me... And I had like hundreds of these children. So people over the years, they saw them on radio or when I was taping on TV too, on the cameras, the shows. So that's what you are saying to me. The reward, then you saw the child who couldn't focus on the lyrics, couldn't focus on the voice, or was so petrified to even think that the voice can sound prettier or ever will be sounding prettier. And you slowly give them the little tools how to, and being the enthusiastic one like you and I are, so they start trusting you too, thinking that, oh, she really makes me feel better about myself, and then getting them through audition, smaller audition. And then one of my amazing, not one, I had lots of successful students, but the last one that I loved dearly, Kyla, she was one of my last shows too before I moved to London. She's just scoring every audition right now, every audition in a high school, and went in the summer to big gatherings for young students. She got already accepted for Loyola, one of the biggest, you know, art school, and they said, who was the teacher, who was the school? They thought that she was going to some performance school, and she said, no, it's one teacher, one for 5 years that I work with. And I'm telling you, I saw her because they had performances with a lot of different artists. My child, my girl, Kyla, was the best. So, oh, how this felt great. So I know how much is to, we can help children, you know, through the music or through the confidence, through the body language, through the just talking to them. And you are the exemplary, and your son was the first one that you really, you know, put your thoughts into it, and yeah, took care of him very, very well. He's a charming gentleman.
He is, isn't he?
What
he
is his
special.
Name?
Abe.
And we know that in the future he'll be a filmmaker. I had the pleasure to meet him. It's a very special young gentleman. So I don't know. I want also people, because we are almost done with the show. We have 5 minutes. And I would love to not forget to tell people that you were working for Discovery in USA. Mm-hmm. You had some good big project, which means touring and traveling. But what you were doing, and you were doing something also for NASA. Please, I don't want to miss something for this interview.
Yeah.
It was important part of your life.
Yeah, no, that was, so, it was a documentary company I was working for, where, again, you know, you go in and you get a good feeling, and it was like, honestly, it was like family. It was just a dream place to work. They had this beautiful building in Covent Garden, and I started there in October, and you'd look out of this building into this very old cobble street, and it was like being part of Dickensian London in such a beautiful way. And it was a really, really lovely old building with those wooden stairs where they're slightly worn down because it's just such an old building.
So many people walk on so many years.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And we were, the team were family. Whenever you're on a good project, it feels like family, and this was family. And we were making a celebratory science series about the human body. And it was for Discovery USA. So it was a lot of CGI, a lot of drama reconstruction, interviews with experts and people who'd experienced all these crazy things. So we were based in LA for a lot of it. Because LA, gosh, you turn up to LA and just everybody is just an expert. You don't need to explain anything. The language is just there. It's like, oh, yeah, you want this. Yeah, sure, fine, we can do it. It's a pleasure to film in LA, because it's a city set up for drama. And then part of the reconstruction we did in Oregon. And then more interviews were done in New York, so we were all over the place, and it was a fantastic experience. And I was pregnant at the time as well, and I was just taken care of so well, and it was wonderful. So then that same company, I'm super interested in NASA and space exploration. The same company were making a series about NASA shortly afterwards, which I sadly couldn't work on because I was pregnant and I was going to have my child at that, you know, my child would have just been born at that time. But in the edit, they needed some help with things. And at that stage, you know, my son was about 9 months old then, and I could actually go in, and they were like, look, just come on in, come to the last bit of it, come to the tail end of it. And I got to hear recordings of what was going on with Capcom, and I got to read transcripts from all these astronauts who were my heroes. And oh, honestly, for somebody who's a space nut, it was just heaven.
Wow. So that's very, very cool and big and different, the scientific part of your life, too, that you had, you know, time and pleasure to work on. And because I need to wrap our show today for today, I would love people to maybe know name of your business if somebody wants to contact you, because everybody has a child that maybe needs you, a lot of people. So how, of course, you are in London, you are working via internet too.
Absolutely. Skype me.
What would be the best way to contact you?
The website for my business is confidencecoach.info. So that's confidencecoach, no spaces, .info, I-N for November, F-O. And my email, they can contact me. That's all actually through the website, so they can just go straight directly through that. But I also do voiceovers as well.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that.
Yeah, no.
But we'll have another meeting with both of you, because I know things are progressing in a very good way. So again, the website is, one more time,
confidencecoach.info.
And your full name?
Renu Faraway.
So, and how we pronunciate your first, Renu?
Renu.
Yes.
Rain. Is it raining? Rain? Ooh, yes it is.
It's raining. But when we spell, it's a little different.
R-A-N-U.
Yes, that's for people who don't live here or don't know this name. Like, I didn't know how to really pronounce your name.
You know, in India, Renu, it's as common as Jane. It's literally,
Really? Renu, beautiful. So thank you so much for today, and I'm so happy to become your friend, and hopefully we'll see each other a lot in life, and we'll do something crazy together and very adventurous for younger people or for all ladies or for everybody who wants to know what we can create together. Okay, thank you for today again.
Thank you.
Next time, Ilona Europa, Accent on London edition on LA Talk Radio, Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, Channel 1. We will close our show with one more song, Natasha Mira calling out to me. Bye.
In the darkness I can see a glimpse of who I want to be. Dancing moments in the air. I wanna run, see what I can become until I've won. I'm running far and wide, searching land and sea. I've never starlight, I can see. Imagine who I'm gonna be. Searching.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.